Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, episode number 116.
Why did I think that you were making such intense eye contact with me? Why did I think that this was a 10 and you were about to just like whip a shot out of your pocket or something?
It does feel like it's been a little while on those, but I guess it's only been 6 episodes.
Yeah, well, it hasn't though, because we did one for the Patreon not long ago.
Yes, we did one for the Jesse Ventura story.
Hell yeah, sure did. That was a time.
So Emily, what is it we do here on this show?
We question what the hell we're doing.
Yeah.
We take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s, episodically through WCW Monday Nitro.
And we enjoy our last week before Vince Russo comes back.
But it didn't feel that enjoyable this time. The last couple episodes, I agree, it does feel like we're getting our comeuppance, but this one, I don't know. Something about this made me feel like it was old Nitro. It was like when we first started Nitro. It was like chaotic, nothing really made sense.
I think it's because it's the go-home for Bash the Beach, because today we're talking about the July 3rd, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro.
Finally! Finally!
Yes, I am ready for you to be whelmed.
I don't even care at this point. I just need to know. I don't care if it's good, I don't care if it's bad, I just need to know why I can't know.
But Emily, we're not at Bash the Beach yet. We have a Nitro and a Thunder, and we have to talk about last week's Nitro. We got some stuff to talk about.
And even when we get to Bash at the Beach, we have so much content to watch around that. It feels like we're still prolonging this so much.
Yeah. Yeah, the next episode might be a bit longer, I assume. The one after that definitely will be, because that's our 4-year anniversary.
Bitsies, baby! We are back.
It's a struggle to find qualifying things for the Bitsies, man. So, Emily, I have some backstage notes for this July 3rd Nitro, live from Charleston, West Virginia, which did a 2.3.
Raw's
5-3. Like, ooh, not great.
That tracks. Honestly, 5-3 for Raw doesn't feel like that was that good
either.
Yeah,
I was trying to see if there's anything on that night, and I couldn't find much. I mean, we talked about, like, one of the last ones. Oh, it's the night of the NBA Finals. Or
yeah, no, it's July. I mean, unless there's, like, 4th of July programming.
But some backstage notes. So, you know how there's a whole Goldberg and Kevin Nash story over Scott Hall's contract?
Yeah.
Yeah, so WCW higher up. Brad Siegel. He's like, no, we're not bringing Scott Hall back.
So I know that. And yeah. They do a whole thing in this episode where it's like, why are we wasting our time when I know that he's not coming back?
Somehow, while booking only for internet fans, they're also hoping that internet fans don't pay attention to that.
Jeez.
Kurt Hennig's contract is officially up.
Does it get renewed?
No. Rey Mysterio's knee is still fucked up and they just keep having him wrestle. Stevie Ray may become a color commentator. This does end up happening.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he ends up on Thunder for the most part.
Oh, thank God. I don't want that.
Ric Flair is hoping to be back by September. I think he's back a little later than that, but I don't know for certain.
He feels far away.
He has one of those Wikipedia articles where it's like, yep, he was president, and then he lost it to Sting when Eric Bischoff came back. And then, like, you know, the company ended. It's like, oh, a year and a half went by.
Yeah, I remember that was one of the reasons we wanted to do this show, because there were so many blank spots like that.
Shane Douglas may have a neck injury, but is refusing to get checked out.
That sounds like Shane.
Well, it's mostly because WCW started cutting pay for injured superstars, so it's like...
Okay, that sucks.
Yeah, if I go checked out and I'm hurt, well, I don't make as much money now.
Yeah, damn, that sucks.
And it's really up to the company whether or not they extend the time on your contract because you were hurt.
And with what they're doing with the French fries right now, I wouldn't be surprised if they just decided, yeah, we're done.
Hulk Hogan did a political ad. This is in 2000, not 2024.
Did he say he was running for president in 2000?
We're long past that, Emily. Well, that ended right around the time the finger poke happened.
I'm just saying, it's election year. Maybe somebody convinced him to come back.
No. No, it was like, hey, vote on this local referendum kind of thing for Clearwater, Florida.
Mm.
There was some controversy.
Of course there was.
Because Hulk Hogan does not live in Clearwater, Florida. He lives nearby, but is not a registered voter in Clearwater, Florida.
If he lives nearby, I feel like he's allowed to say, like, do the political ad.
It was specifically for that neighborhood and all that. And he goes, I've lived here for 12 years, so this affects me, and I'll be voting this. Like,
okay, so he lied.
Yeah. What? Hogan?
That's the controversy.
The campaign put out a thing of like, oh yeah, we fucked up. Sorry, guys.
Who cares?
Vampiro is apparently working on recording an album with the ICP.
Yikes.
This does not happen, for better or worse. And then a weird tie-in to our Patreon. The E! Network aired a one-hour True Hollywood Story episode on Jesse Ventura that heavily focused on his wrestling career.
And we didn't watch that for the Patreon?
Well, no, I don't think he faced Goldberg in that one.
Yeah, it's true. We need the real 70s. Documentary.
And Canyon. And go check that out.
Yeah, subscribe to our Patreon.
And I think next, it's time for a weather report, Emily, where there's always thunder.
So cheesy.
Fun fact, I was looking for a thunder sound effect I wanted, and I realized the one I want is from SpongeBob.
You're such a millennial, it hurts.
So on the last Thunder, Horace Hogan got a WCW title shot.
Of course he did. I didn't know Horace was still there.
Because Jeff Jarrett just cannot go a show without...
Yo, fuck Jeff Jarrett in this episode.
On Thunder, Jeff Jarrett is like, I'm looking for some fat ladies to sing because Terry Bollea's done. Mm. Lieutenant Loco and Corporal Cajun faced each other for no real reason?
Sure.
I mean, like two guys in the same faction. Yeah. Like, no real dissension. It was just like, yeah, Cruiserweight title match. Here you go. Have a decent match. And yeah.
Time filler. That's what the reason was.
We did get more Stripes references in the setup for this. So
of course.
That's clearly somebody's favorite movie. A mysterious figure watched Vampiro from on top of the Tron.
The Thunder Vision?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's what they call it later.
Apparently, they're on top of the Titantron. It's Thunder Vision.
And Vampiro is like, yeah, I got rid of Steve Borden. Now I'm going to get rid of Dale Torborg.
Oh, we're doing the real names gimmick again. All right.
Oh, what is Vampiro's real name? I bet it's something fucking stupid.
Oh, we've looked this up before.
I don't think we have. Ian Richard Hodgkinson.
Oh, maybe we haven't. Okay, Ian.
I don't know. He strikes me as somebody who would have been like, I'm changing my name to Vampiro.
Legally, yeah.
Pulling a Ryback and Warrior and
all
the others.
I also feel like Conan did that.
We're not going to do the whole what's the real name. Elsewhere on Thunder, Kidman and Storm beat Ray and Hoovy, a match we'll get later on tonight. They did Tigress versus Paisley, which I don't need to tell you how that went.
No.
And the main event was The Cat helping Mike Awesome defeat Scott Steiner, which we'll have to talk about that match.
Mm.
Because the first thing that happens on the Nitro that we're watching is the Cat is in his office and tells Eric Bischoff that he suspended Scott Steiner. This is a legitimate suspension.
Oh.
Scott Steiner threw a fit about having a job to Mike Awesome and threatened to fight Terry Taylor, the booker. I was like, okay, you're suspended with pay for the 4th of July weekend.
No, I don't want him.
That'll learn him.
Yeah, okay.
So, yes, Scott Steiner is legitimately suspended. He will be back for the pay-per-view, though, and the nice pay-per-view payday.
They did say that, like, it was only for a week. So, okay, so there was some truth there.
Oh, I'm not disputing that what they said was wrong. I was saying how they're handling it is wrong.
Obviously, they didn't think it was that serious, and they needed to do something to save face.
I think it's more they only care so much, and, well, we need him for the pay-per-view, so.
Yeah, but they needed to do some sort of, like, formal slap on the wrist to prove that, like, no, we take this seriously. He got suspended.
When Jeff Jarrett's champion, it's not a slap on the wrist. It's a slap on the nuts.
Jesus Christ.
So Mike Awesome interrupts the Cat's phone call to make sure that he made the call.
What call? It
was for four ambulances.
Oh, yeah. So that was one of the other things that, like, started the show was this, like, backstage shot of these four ambulances.
Yes.
Like, great use of city resources, guys. Hope nothing actually happens. Hope you don't need these.
We then get the opening pyro, and Tank Abbott then comes out in a really rinky-dink three-count shirt and takes over the DJ Ran booth.
So, okay, this might just be my stupidity, and I'm sorry if it is. This whole time, when we're talking about DJ Ran, I thought there was a D on that. I thought it was DJ Rand.
Oh, like Ayn Rand?
This whole time. Up until I saw it written on the DJ booth in this segment, I thought it was DJ Rand. And we were just, like, silently dropping the D.
Okay. Nope, I never thought it had a D in it besides the D in
but
DJ.
You never pronounced the D, and I never read your notes, so, like, I don't know how you see it, and it's never written out on the show. So since the day one, I thought this was DJ Rand.
Okay.
So I didn't understand the joke when Tank Abbott comes and takes over the DJ booth, and he's like, yeah, the DJ lives up to his name. I was like, what? He ran?
He just, yeah, no. Tank Abbott found copies of Ayn Rand books up there.
Yeah, sure, that tracks too. Oh my god, yeah. So I'm sorry for my stupidity.
Tank Abbott brings out three count and they want to cut a promo, but Tank Abbott's like, shut up and dance with me. Oh, sorry, I mean sing.
Good one.
But yeah, it's like, no, do the song.
My little puppets, do the dance.
Say the line, Bart. So they just play the song, but no one has headset mics on. So it's like, yeah, sing the song.
You're obviously lip syncing.
Yeah.
Obviously. I don't know. I was happy, though, because this led into us getting a full 3-count performance. We've never gotten a full one before.
I actually kind of like Tank dancing along.
I don't.
I know.
He's ruining 3-count for me.
You're going to hate my thoughts on this match.
No!
Because the Young Dragons then come out for a 6-man tag, and in the brawl to start, Helms is taken out, and they call for the trainer. So Tank Abbott gets up on the apron. He's now the 3rd man in 3-count. Evan Courageous hits a wheelbarrow facebuster, and Shannon Moore hits a front-falling suplex. Yang then hits a wheelbarrow facebuster the other way, and tags in Kaz Hayashi. Courageous sends Kaz to the floor and hits a springboard crossbody to the floor. Jamie-san nearly misses a springboard moonsault press, but Courageous, like, dives to go catch him. And I'm like, good on
you. Yeah, good for Courageous.
Shannon Moore then hits a somersault plancha, and Yang goes for another dive, but Tank Abbott gets in the way in the ring. Yang then tries a karate combo on Tank, but it has no effect, much like using close combat on a Gengar.
Yeah,
no, that's too cool for Tank Abbott. A Koffagrigus, why not?
What?
More like Ghostberg.
I fucking hate you.
Didn't mean to set myself up for that, but I did.
I fucking hate you.
And Tank just knocks out Yang. Shannon Moore pins him and 3-count perform post-match with Tank Abbott having his own performance square on the floor and he dances along. You're going to hate this. I enjoy Tank Abbott with these guys.
I don't enjoy Tank Abbott. I think he is ruining 3-count.
See, to me, he's committing. I believe
he
him
is
more
kind of committing.
I believe him more here than I did fucking Ghostberg.
Sure, but he's just like he's a bad actor. So I guess he's committing, but it's not coming off genuine. I don't know. It's still very difficult for me to watch and enjoy. I just want him to leave.
Yeah, I don't know what happens with this.
Ugh. The match itself was fine. And like, again, I'm happy we saw 3-count do their whole thing and it wasn't cut off by some like copyright whatever. The match was fine. I've seen these three and Young Dragons do better. And the fact that, you know, Shane got knocked out and Tank had to come in, that doesn't help things.
Yeah, I would like a little more variety in who these two face, because I kind of noticed this while I was compiling the Bitsy stuff. I'm like, oh, wow, one of the best bits that both of us had was Young Dragons versus 3-count. From when, though?
That would have to have been recently, right?
I don't think it was the recent one. I think it was like randomly in like December or something.
Oh, huh.
For the record, you still have until the end of August for Tank Abbott.
Okay, that's not as far out.
You have
two
full months.
Okay, that's not as far out. I can do that.
We then see Kevin Nash arriving at the arena, but his clothes are somehow already hung up in the locker room. Sure.
He probably has an assistant or something. You can write that in.
He's told by a random production person, like, hey, there's a video package up next I think you're really going to like. It's like, okay.
Cool. That was random. That was weird.
Yeah. Elsewhere backstage, the Cat has a proposition for the Young Dragons. Goldberg arrives, and we hear a very mixed reaction to this. As much as he killed Jim Duggan last week, it's still like, hey, he's still a cool guy.
Yeah, the crowd still doesn't know how to boo this man.
Goldberg is still unhappy being a heel, too.
Well, yeah, that actually is very obvious, especially when he has his promo later. It's very clear that he does not want to be saying what he's saying.
Elsewhere backstage, Mike Awesome bumps into a crew member and just power bombs him through a table next to them.
Mike Awesome is fucking huge.
Yes.
He's massive.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, like, I did not fully understand where all this rage was coming from. So the fact that he's huge and angry, roid rage. That was my first thought. It's like, this man is massive. What is happening here? Did we ever actually get an explanation on why he's just attacking backstage people?
He's mad about something with the Scott Steiner match that he won. I don't get
that,
this.
Yeah, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. That's why I was like, okay, so you're just on a roid rage rampage.
We then get the previously mentioned video package that Kevin Nash would really like. It's all about the Outsiders.
It's just like a black and white vignette video of how cool Kevin Nash and Scott Hall are. Remember how cool Scott Hall is? Maybe we should bring him back. Wouldn't you love to see the Outsiders together again? We were so cool. This is very confusing to me because, again, I know he doesn't come back. So why are we doing this?
We then randomly cut to inside the production truck mid-video because technically it hasn't been stopped yet. So there's no reason to cut to this.
Yeah.
Or even have a camera there, but yes, whatever. Right. Goldberg storms in and tells him to turn off the sentimental crap.
It is a little sentimental. It does feel like I don't know. It doesn't feel like somebody died, but it feels like, oh, remember the good old days.
Yeah. It feels like somebody's birthday.
Yeah. Or it feels like a high school reunion or like a graduation video or something.
Goldberg then makes his entrance to a mixed reaction again. And Goldberg says he's heard enough of this outsider crap. He says, Hall and Nash have tried to destroy WCW, but what about Goldberg? Unrelated, Raven will be debuting in WWF soon.
Oh, good. What about Raven?
Goldberg says everyone saw what he did to Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and if he did that to him, imagine what he'll do to Nash on Sunday.
Nash will actually put up a little bit more of a fight than Jim Duggan. Like, I love Jim Duggan, but that man was not going to put up a fight.
He only had one kidney, Emily.
That's true. Kevin Nash, like, while he will just kind of stand and be a statue, he will, like, punch back.
Goldberg says it's his time and their blood is on the fans' hands. And then Kevin Nash comes out to the stage and says he has four words for Goldberg. The first two are, it's my time. And the second two are, why wait? I was trying to, like, even figure out the first part of that.
He also calls him a bald-headed bitch, and I kind of loved that.
R&B security suddenly appear and break it up before the cat comes out and it's like, all right, go to commercial.
So I didn't understand this at first because I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of security for these two. Just like back the fuck off. The next segment actually does make me understand why this all happened.
Well, it's just them trying to keep them from fighting before the pay-per-view.
Yeah, they want to keep the money. Like, yeah. Like, no. Save my ratings.
Did you catch the weird Mark Madden line after the cat's line?
No.
The cat says, go to commercial. Mark Madden's like, what do you mean by commercial? What?
What?
I was befuddled. I don't know what the fuck he was going for.
Commentary was on something weird tonight, yeah. Especially in this beginning portion. Because did you notice that Tony Schiavone, like, at the beginning, he didn't really have a script. He was just reading signs in the audience. He was literally reading out. Oh, I can't think of what they were anymore. But he was like, they would focus on a sign in the audience and he would read it out loud. I've never seen him or anybody on commentary do that before.
Tony Schiavone has a line where I hear him give up in the middle of it later.
Really? Oh, this man.
It's about Vampiro. It's about spooky bullshit. And he just... you feel the light leave him.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
During the break, it took the whole locker room to separate them. And then Mike Awesome just randomly powerbombed a security guard on the floor.
For again, ambulance why are you number here? Two. What the fuck?
The cat then talks to Eric Bischoff on the phone, who's totally on the other end.
Yeah, for sure.
He doesn't know what to do, but he'll keep them separated. And they're like, so what the fuck is he going to do then?
Don't give these rednecks the match for free. That was the line that, like, yeah. I was like, oh, duh.
We then get Terry Funk hyping up Johnny the Bull for his match with a mystery opponent. And Johnny the Bull takes two steps. Funk hits Johnny the Bull from behind with a chair.
I am your opponent. Yeah.
Which he says like three times. And commentary's like, could Terry Funk be the opponent? I'm like, yes.
I thought it was great. He just turns around, hits him with a chair. I am your opponent. It's me, Austin.
Funk just kicks Johnny the Bull's ass around ringside for a lot of this. And then works him over with a chair while just yelling at him. It's like, you gotta toughen up.
Again on commentary, I think it was Scott Hudson was saying that Terry's taking Johnny to the final day of classes at Funk U. And Tony's like, I beg your pardon?
Funk punches Johnny in the corner and then throws him face first into a chair. Then Funk throws the chair at Johnny's back and slams him onto the announce table. Johnny the Bull just forgets his spot of kicking the chair into Funk. So Terry Funk has to softly hit a chair shot, grab him and go, you fucking kick me, you idiot. And then Johnny the Bull does his spot. Johnny the Bull then hits chair shots on Funk, and they go into the crowd for a second. The camera has a real hard time following them.
Yeah, the camera had no idea this was happening, apparently.
Like, two security guards kind of followed, and then just like, kind of came back.
Yeah.
Well, before that, Johnny the Bull hits a pile driver on a chair on the floor on Funk, and Johnny the Bull almost fucking slips on this. Mm-hmm. Like, on the chair, you see him kind of lose his footing, and I'm like, Jesus. So, for some reason, Funk is bleeding. I don't know what he caught where.
I don't know, but it looked like he was bleeding from his eye, like, or maybe like his cheekbone or something. Lots of blood on his face.
Johnny the Bull then hits a suplex on the mats and lays a chair on a downed Terry Funk's face on the floor.
Yes.
He then goes for a running springboard and slips backwards to like lands on his feet. Like, okay, didn't work. He then goes for it again and hits a running springboard leg drop to a chair on the floor.
On top of Terry.
Yes. He very clearly fucks himself up here.
I didn't see it. I was just happy he made the move, but...
No, he's requiring help to stand up at every point after this. He doesn't get in the ring for like a full minute because he can't stand up. Turn to the Bolton hits a soft chair toss as he cannot muster any strength. In the ring, he ducks a chair shot and tries for an inside cradle, but Funk decides, like, nope, we're finishing this match the way it's supposed to be, because John of the Bull is like, please, just end this.
Please take me out of my misery.
John of the Bull hits a weak chair shot again, but Funk kicks out, and then John of the Bull hits a DDT on the chair, and Funk kicks out at, like, 3.5, so yeah, John of the Bull wins. Funk gets up before Johnny and is ready for more. Funk helps Johnny up and talks to him as we cut away.
So I took that as like, let me help you up. Good match. Good job, my pupil.
Well, during the commentary segment up next, we literally cut to a referee and somebody like carrying him out, like where John DeBull's arms are around them and they're holding up his legs.
Yeah. Because I just took that as like, it was a really rough match. Like he put in his work. He earned his hardcore badge, whatever.
Yeah. John DeBull really fucked up his pelvis, busted his bladder, and tore his urethra.
Oh my god.
So, yeah, it was a real killer night for him.
Go fuck yourself. How do you do that?
Well, you do it by doing a spot that everyone tells you is fucking stupid and you shouldn't do.
But, like, that spot would not, to me, be like, oh, your bladder is fucked up.
Will I be able to get around comfortably? You need a new bladder.
Jesus.
You need a new pelvis. You see a whole new lower half.
You need a new urethra tear.
So he's supposed to face Vito on Sunday. I don't think
that happens.
I think Norman Smiley takes that spot.
Okay. Sure. Whatever.
And Ralphus.
Oh, Ralphus! Yeah. God, where the hell's Ralphus been?
I think we're on borrowed time with Ralphus. I think he's only got one or two appearances left.
Oh, Ralph.
Thoughts on this actual match?
I mean, it was fine. I've seen Terry Funk do worse and also better.
Yeah, Funk apparently wanted to continue the match because it was supposed to be this big, like, oh, Johnny the Bull has overcome Terry Funk kind of thing. And yeah, rough
the
day.
Like, with the mentor storyline with this of like Terry Funk being his, you know, hardcore teacher, it made sense.
Yeah.
It should have been at a pay-per-view if that was going to be the culmination of their storyline, but like, it was fine. I don't know. I didn't really care for it that much. It wasn't really hardcore.
Yeah.
Me, ironically, because he fucking ruined himself.
Commentary then hypes up the rest of the show as we see Johnny the Bull being carried out. And Tony throws to a clip from earlier today of Asia and Dale Torborg. They're rehearsing a new entrance. Can we talk about the fact that she's still called Asia and he's Dale Torborg?
What's her real name?
Christy Wolf.
How much does this guy weigh?
Did you catch the line of what happened to Asia during this?
She got, it was like a concussion bomb?
Yes! So Pyro goes off and she goes flying off the stage. They shoot this in a way where it was like, oh, this one camera trying to like test an angle or whatever. And some Pyro goes off. And like, she was hit with like a concussion bomb. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I was going to ask you if that was like a usual phrase of some kind of Pyro. Yeah, because they say it a couple of times. The way that this shot is what you're supposed to believe, like, happened to Asia. Obviously, this didn't happen. But the way that it was shot is she walked to the edge of the stage and stepped on, like, a pyro cannon, and the pyro cannon went off.
Yeah. Very shades of 2009 Jeff Hardy.
Sure. But obviously, there was some nefarious, you know, inner workings going on with some dark hooded figure, maybe, probably.
In dark corners for doing
dark
deeds.
With dark concussion bombs.
Dale Torborg is then seen grabbing his stuff and he's like, all right, I'm going back to the hospital. But oh no, the lights are flickering where he's at. And someone in a Sting mask has the full demon garb and gives it to Dale Torborg.
He folds to this so quickly. Your fiance just got blown up and you just walk in, you're like, costume? Yeah, okay.
So the person in the Sting mask is revealed to be Vampiro.
What?
But there's another hooded figure behind Vampiro. However, based on the eye lines of this scene, Vampiro is looking directly at this person the whole encounter.
Well, he like steps out from behind like a shadowy thing once the handoff happens.
I backed it up. He's standing just next to a pile of something. He's in full view if you know what you're looking for.
So, I call these guys the Sting Spookies.
Yeah.
That's what I call them moving forward.
Well, what are you talking about? It's Christopher Daniels.
They're the Sting Spookies. They're all wearing Sting masks.
They're all Christopher Daniels.
They're all Sting Spookies.
So we'll get more on these two later. But you then get the cat checking on Goldberg, and like, oh man, Kevin Nash totally left. But Goldberg wants Nash on a silver platter tonight. We'll get the reverse of this in a bit. But let's go to tag team match. It's Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak versus the Misfits in Action.
I call these the no-name boys.
Corporal Cajun and General Hugh G. Rection with major guns.
Don't ask me which is which of Jindrak and O'Hare.
O'Hare's the one who can wrestle.
What?
O'Hare's the one who can wrestle.
They both did moves to me.
Now, they're not in the Ruthless Aggression attire this week. They're in cargo pants.
They fit more with the actual, like, mid-card. I don't know. They're all kind of wearing cargo shorts around this time.
Yeah, the winner of this match gets a tag title shot next week. Match starts, Lash LaRue. I really did alternate between calling him Lash and Corporal Cajun.
Oh, so you agree. The names are fucking stupid.
How dare you say the name General Hugh G. Rection is stupid?
I don't care about anything happening in this match in the slightest. I don't give a fuck. I don't know who these guys' names are. I don't care about MIA. They have fully fallen off for me. I don't care. They stopped being interesting when Booker T left.
Lash hits Shake, Rattle, and Roll early on. O'Hare stops some double team action with a spin kick to E. Rection. The rookies then beat down Rection until O'Hare is thrown off the top rope, and then Cajun is thrown onto him. The rookies hit big double team moves to Corporal Cajun, and then we get Sean O'Hare coming in illegally to stop a tag. So the ref obviously yells at General Rection. I do want to note my annoyance with that spot. That's because that's a common spot in tag team wrestling. It's fine. You need to have the ref not see the heel. He looked directly at him in the ring, went, that's fine. Oh, you though? No.
I mean, you've had the, that's not a new take from you. No. You've had this.
I just wanted to pinpoint what it was because we've talked about my annoyances with the rules, and it's like, no, it's just, it's a timing thing with the wrestlers and the ref.
This is a complaint of yours that transcends the, oh, the refs are, you know, more laid back. Like, this happened before that.
Like, I just, you know, he's trying to hear to, like, fake doing something, but when he comes in and breaks up the pin, you go, well, he's fine to stay in then.
Yeah.
Corporal Cajun locks in a small package, but the referee is still distracted. Cajun then counters a Jindrak vault with a forearm to Sean O'Hare. Rection gets the hot tag and cleans house to very little reaction. Corporal Cajun then takes Sean O'Hare out of the ring, but O'Hare is up immediately. I don't know what was that. I don't know what that was all about. Because Rection then goes for no laughing matter, but Mark Jindrak gets him up on his shoulders and goes for like the electric chair drop where you just fall backwards.
Yeah.
Something happens with the timing here because both of them end up not going that far and like kind of spiking each other.
Oh.
And then because they're so far, Sean O'Hare goes up to the top rope and is super wobbly because he has to go that far and just hits a really flaily dive.
Oh.
Corporal Cajun breaks up that pin and O'Hare is sent to the floor. We get a Whiplash 2000 and No Laughing Matter combo to Mark Jindrak and the Misfits in Action win.
Obviously. They were always going to win.
I
mean, MIA was obviously going to win. Like, at this point, Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak?
Yeah.
They're still jobbers. They're still nothing. They're gonna get squashed. So, like, you know how the match is gonna end. And I think that's why I didn't give a shit. Like, you know how it's gonna end. Sure, they were flippy. They were fine. Whatever. But, like, why would I care?
Well, that's my thought. You have them win. That way you go, oh, hey, we're building somebody new.
That would have been interesting. If they had won, I probably would have backed this match up and been like, oh, shit. Maybe this is something to watch. But they didn't. And then Major Guns whipped her tits out. So, like, of course it fucking, yeah. Of course.
Well, we're not there yet because almost immediately after the win, the Perfect Event hit the ring and attack everyone with muscle flexors. The other MIA members come in and are also beat down as the timekeeper just kind of keeps ringing the bell. The Perfect Event then just kind of stand in the ring congratulating each other.
Supposedly, they're doing like a pose thing like Luger used to do.
But
not really.
Everyone else just slowly gets up and is suddenly no-selling the whole beatdown.
Yeah.
And then they attack the Perfect Event. This isn't even who's the real winner, brother, because they weren't in the match.
I stand by. Tell me why I should care.
Yeah, Major Guns then strips, and everyone lays down to get mouth-to-mouth.
Yeah, because that's how that works. And then we cut away, and you can literally hear the crowd like whooping and hooping and hollering.
Yeah. The actual match itself was C minus. It wasn't bad, like, work rate wise, but yeah, it was hard to care.
Yeah, there were no stakes. You knew who was going to win as soon as Jindrak and O'Hare came out. Like, you knew what was going to happen. It was just standard.
Mark Jindrak continues to not look all that good.
Yeah.
Backstage, the cat tells Kevin Nash that Goldberg totally left. Boom's in the shot.
Yeah, I caught that too.
Nash wants the match tonight and make it happen. I'm going to beat you up. Backstage, Mike Awesome powerbombs another crew member through a table.
What is this deal? This is weird. Although I will say that that boom in the shot thing, I had that note for a later segment, not this segment.
The cat then whinges to Eric Bischoff on the phone about Goldberg and Nash, and he suddenly has an idea.
I'm sure it'll be a great idea. I'm sure it'll be a worthwhile idea that'll take more than 5 minutes at the very end of the show.
At the top of the hour, WCW champion Jeff Jarrett makes his first appearance on the show, coming out to the ring absolutely drenched. What the hell? Oh my God. Jarrett asks the crowd if they can feel the stroke.
You mentioned that he's wet. Do you think it's sweat or do you think it's like water?
I don't know.
Because he is concerningly wet.
It's like blotchy too. I'm like, what is
that's,
this?
Yeah, it's like he got out of the shower and had put a t-shirt on too quickly.
Too much stroking.
Ew.
Jarrett says he came out here for one reason, to make a simple statement. Hulk Hogan is the man. And he says when he was a little slap nut, which made me laugh.
Jesus.
His grandfather told him that when he was younger, he used to watch Hulk Hogan.
So he's just calling Hulk Hogan old.
Yeah, I think there was a line of like, he used to pay like a quarter of a hay penny to go see it. At Bash the Beach, he'll send Hogan out to pasture, and Hogan might be the man, but Jeff Jarrett is a god. And commentary really struggles with that.
Yeah, because it's stupid. There's also a sign in the crowd that I took note of here. Tony Schiavone did not read this one out loud, but it says, hit Jarrett with a cello. And I thought that was funny.
Because you want to.
I do want to hit him with a cello.
Jarrett then says he has a preview for Sunday and tells the fat ladies to come out to the ring.
Okay, so before we get this reveal, I immediately knew what this was when he called the fat ladies. I was like, oh, the fat ladies are going to sing. And then I saw them come out and they were like legitimately bigger women. I was like, oh my God, I bet these are opera singers. I bet he's actually going to have them get in the ring and sing.
Yep.
This has potential to be my best bit. I'm in. I'm ready.
They come out to Flight of the Valkyrie. And I think on commentary, Scott Hudson is like, or Kill the Wabbit for those on Mark's level.
Kill the Wabbit, Kill the Wabbit, Kill the Wabbit.
What's that from, Emily?
I've never seen it. But it's a running joke that I've never seen the Looney Tunes because I didn't grow up with the Looney Tunes. I've seen clips. Shut up.
Mark Madden does beat Jeff Jarrett to the line of the fat lady's gonna sing on Sunday.
Yeah.
The ladies just generally struggle with the entrance because they're all wearing Viking costumes with metal plates.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best use of metal plates we've seen. I think it's still Goldberg.
Yeah, probably.
And Bret Hart. So that's probably still better.
I mean, put this under a t-shirt. It'd probably still be good.
Because at first, only two of them come out. And then the third one comes out. And they go to get in the ring. And they can't.
No, so they all just like stand awkwardly on the apron, and Jeff Jarrett has to be like, come on, ladies, hop in the ring. And the first one's like, can you like open the ropes for us? Like, can you do something?
Yeah, so Jarrett holds like the bottom rope open, and it's like, nope, I need the middle one. And then the one can't get in with like the helmet, like it's almost falling off. And Jarrett gets all of them in the ring, and he's a professional, but that man is so close to corpsing. You hear it a little in his voice, like, this Sunday.
Yeah, it was bad. He also does call them hippo hips, which...
Yeah, he has a lot of lines for fat in this.
Yeah, fuck you, Jeffrey.
Jarrett asks the women who's going to win. They all pick him. The crowd pops for ribs when he insults the women.
For ribs?
Yeah. He's talking about like, all right, like the best one's going to like get all you can eat at catering. And I know like Jimmy's ribs are the best. And the crowd popped.
Oh, God. Maybe that's like a local thing.
I don't know. My notes auto-corrected. The women sing the goodbye song, but I wrote the women sing the Goldberg song.
Oh, my God. But they're singing na, 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 na. Hey, 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 goodbye.
Except they get the Dave Penzer treatment, so they can sing.
Jesus Christ. I was so mad because up until this moment, I was like, this is still really faffy and this is really still dumb. If these are actual opera singers, it's saved for me. It's the best bit. And then they cannot sing.
Yeah. And then some guy in a suit comes out and is like, nah, shut it down. He's supposedly from Standards and Practices. This is an actor. However, they asked the actual guy from Standards and Practices to be in this. Despite him saying no, they decided to use his name of Galen, which... I was surprised it was a real name. I really thought it was going to be a gay joke.
No.
Jarrett taunts him and then hits him with a guitar. And Jeff Jarrett leaves the women behind, so they have no clue where to go next. And sure.
It's terrible. I fucking hated this. I hated here. This was embarrassing. This looked bad on Jeff Jarrett. This made these poor women in a mockery. It was fucking terrible.
This is what happens when you have a 4-week build with no story for 3 of the weeks.
I hated here.
So the cat then comes out and seems unhappy with Jarrett, and the cat then books a 20-man battle royal, but clearly sets up that Nash and Goldberg have to eliminate 18 other people to get to each other.
So it's a battle royal, but it's a gauntlet battle royal.
Well,
I'm trying to make any kind of sense of it. Yeah, this battle royal is the only way that Nash and Goldberg are going to be in the ring together tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole segment was bad and pointless, and Jesus Christ, guys, do something with Jeff Jarrett.
If this is the best he's got, no wonder he made his own company.
It's the best he's being given.
Yeah. Of course he made his own company to write his own stories. Like,
Well, no, he's got his own company because he was capital G, double O.
Double N, double E.
Backstage, the third ambulance leaves. Elsewhere, Jarrett and the cat argue. We see a clip from Thunder. Canyon hit Buff Bagwell with a brick, kind of on the request to Shane Douglas, which sets up our next match. It's The Franchise versus Booker T.
Briefly, I was excited about this match because I like the idea of anybody beating up Shane Douglas.
Yeah. It's also just good to see, like, Booker has his whole entrance and song back. And
it's always just good to see Booker T. He gives me hope for this company.
Yeah. Booker's attacked by Canyon mid-entrance and then is thrown in the ring. Douglas works over a down Booker, including a front falling suplex and a reverse neck snap, and then won the normal way. Booker slides out of the ring to deck Canyon, but Douglas is back on him quick. Booker almost gets a quick sunset flip roll up, but Douglas kicks out, and Booker starts to come back with a forearm, scissor kick, spinneroony, and a Harlem sidekick. Canyon then distracts Booker, so Douglas tries for a roll up, but Booker kicks out and then hits a really weak looking bookend for the win. It was weak because Shane Douglas jumped on the wrong point.
Oh, okay.
Booker gets the win, but is immediately beat down by Canyon and Shane Douglas, and DDP's music hits, and Tony Schiavone's super excited until Mark Madden points out that it's also Canyon's music now.
I think he kind of forgot.
Yeah. This is a decent, quick match.
It was quick, which was good. Honorable MVP mention to the wig on Canyon, because that thing was holding on for dear life at the end there.
He was having a blast on Thunder, just attacking people.
Good. I love Canyon. I think that, like, there's not a gimmick that he does poorly.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, Holly or Champagne Canyon. That's what it was. It was annoying, but, like, you can tell he was having fun with it.
Backstage, Dale Torborg is now in full demon garb.
Full, like, with that red eye contacts and everything.
In the locker room, the cat recruits who used to be the new blood to keep Nash and Goldberg apart in the battle royal, and he offers bonuses to anybody who does well.
He kind of offers bonuses.
Yeah.
Because, like, he says it, and they're all like, oh, yeah, really? And he's like, maybe, yeah, I don't know. Like, backpedals like, on if it you do so well. Quickly. Yeah.
Commentary then recaps the last few events of the Dale Torborg Vampiro story, which brings us to Vampiro versus the demon Dale Torborg.
And this whole match is just waiting for this, like, hooded figure to come out. You know what's going to happen. It's all leading up to that.
Dale sprints the ring, immediately worked over as the crowd chants for Sting.
Oh my god, yeah. I didn't realize how much, like, want there was for Sting in this storyline in particular. Like, obviously we want Sting back, but he's not, like, really at...
You're teasing him coming back, so...
Are they, though? Because, like...
The Sting mask, I mean...
I don't know if that's a tease. I feel like that's just we have extra merch in the back and we need something for the spookies.
No, that's very clearly meant to make you think of Sting.
Well, it does.
Yeah. Vampiro hits a spin kick and Dale dodges a diving leg drop and hits a running back elbow. And before you can really see him get any offense, a bunch of masked Stings wearing robes come out to the ring as Vampiro has regained the advantage. Then Vampiro finally notices all the Stings. The demon hits a Cobra Clutch Slam, apparently called the Love Gun,
for
the
win. When did they call it the Love Gun?
I don't know.
He's a demon. Kiss.
I don't know.
He's a demon. Why does he have a Love Gun?
The hooded Stings get in the ring and all surround Vampiro and they point their bats at him. And the lights go out. And when they come back... He's gone. This is the point where Tony Schiavone's like, he disappeared. Like, you just hear him lose it in his voice there of like, fucking Christ, guys, what are we doing?
And like, it would be cool if we didn't turn the lights off for so fucking long.
Well,
if we did this quicker in a way that was like, oh my God, something actually happened. But no, they just turned the lights off long enough for him to hide under the ring.
It also doesn't help when you turn the lights back on. The 10 stings are like, guess we'll just leave. I don't know.
Bye.
Doing the old slap the knees. Well.
Yeah. It's like,
best I guess get going.
That's the end of my allotted contracted time.
But, God, I don't fucking care about this feud.
No.
And we get a setup for a match, Bash at the Beach later, and I'm like, ugh.
I mean, as much fun as I'm having saying Dale Torborg.
Yeah.
He's not good.
Commentary tried to hype up how big this was for him to beat Vampiro, and it's like, it doesn't matter.
It's Vampiro.
Up next, Emily, you were wrong. It's Smooth.
I was wrong?
We both guessed we would never see him again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he did kind of come out of nowhere in this segment.
Yeah.
There was no introduction like, oh, Smooth is here tonight. He's just like hanging out with the mid-card now.
Yep, he's a secret plan for the Filthy Animals. We then see the cat go to the face locker room, and the cat just calls Kidman a virgin right to his face.
Okay, yeah, I caught that too. That kind of felt out of nowhere, especially because we know that he was with Tori for a while.
Well, the fact that Kidman's just like,
hey, stop that.
So the cat tells them to keep Goldberg away from Nash, and Booker actually like, gets in his face, which prompts everyone else to join, but I'm like,
honestly,
Booker.
Good for Booker. Someone needs to call him out and put him in his place. Yeah, the cat's getting a little too big for his britches and just running back to Daddy Eric every time, so good. We need somebody like Booker.
We then see elsewhere backstage, David Flair tries to reason with Daphne, who is wearing a fairly cute bob wig.
Yeah, it's like bright blue. It's very cute, actually. And it matches. She has like blue eyeliner and mascara on, too. She's very cute.
David keeps getting distracted at Miss Hancock making her entrance on the monitor, and Daphne's like, what are you looking at?
Okay,
nothing.
They're having their whole conversation in front of this massive screen. Move away from the screen, dude. You can still see the screen from across the room. Move.
He wants to be close. He also says he still wants to marry Daphne, who is buying this for reasons.
Yeah.
David then sings a few lines of My Heart Will Go On.
Yeah, and he sings the part that's like, near, far, wherever you are.
You're putting too many notes in that.
Yeah, he's singing it incredibly off-key, but it's like kind of cute. Like, that's something that you and I do to each other. It's almost like they're in love.
We then cut to Miss Hancock in the ring in sort of a wedding dress and a tiara, but the tiara doesn't stay on, so she ditches it very quickly.
Yeah,
smart girl.
It's like a tiara veil.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't last.
Stacey says this isn't her outfit for Sunday, and maybe I'll wear nothing underneath at all.
But she's like, well, because I'll be winning on Sunday and tearing someone else's clothes off, I want to give you guys what you want to see, too.
She starts
so much better than this.
Yeah, she starts dancing, and Crowbar sneaks into the ring with a chair.
God, Crowbar.
In the back, David sees this and suddenly yells about how his stomach hurts and sends Daphne away so he can go save Stacy.
Yeah, she's like, go get Pepto-Bismol. And she's like, oh, okay, Daphne is better than this, too.
Crowbar grabs Miss Hancock and threatens to shave her head.
Oh, my God, he puts her in the loosest, safest headlock. Like, elbow under the neck, just, like, very loosely. Like, I got you. Don't go away.
He cuts the most, like, normal promo here. What happened to him being crazy?
I love this Crowbar.
Yeah.
Crowbar's great.
He's like, hey, like, you got two strikes on you. You were being a wise guy and fooling around on Daphne.
Yeah. He's a good guy. Crowbar is the hero that we need. He's not the hero we deserve. He's the hero we need.
So David comes out, and Crowbar is threatening to shave Stacy's head. So Daphne gets the ring, low blows David Flair, and then pours Pepto-Bismol on him.
Which is, like, kind of evil. That Pepto is so thick and gross and globby. Like, you can't fake that. That was real Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, because David Flair is covered in pink the rest
of
this fucking
disgusting
segment.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Stacy then pushes Daphne into David, which is meant to knock Daphne out. So Stacy gets on top of Daphne, like, we're going to do the catfight thing where I grab you. But Daphne's selling being knocked out, so Stacy's just on top of her doing nothing.
Oh my God, yeah, she's like trying to choke her out, but her hands are basically on Daphne's shoulders, like not doing anything.
Crowbar mercifully breaks this up, and Stacy distracts him so David Flair can hit a chair shot to Crowbar and another one to the head. They then grab Daphne and the electric razor that Crowbar was going to use on Stacy. They shave Daphne's head in all the quotes I can muster.
Every air quote you can find. So they pull off the blue wig, and her long hair kind of falls down.
Her
and it
longer
just
hair
keeps
than
going.
I've ever seen.
It's the longest hair we've ever seen on Daphne. But we're going to shave her head, obviously. So David and Stacy start like grabbing chunks of her hair and like mimicking that they're shaving it off. And the hair just comes off in clumps. And there's a point where David, like, is digging around in her hair and pulls out what is very obviously a tape-in extension. Yeah. And I know it's tape-in because you can literally see the tape track. You can look at it and see where the tape was. He didn't know what he was doing. He didn't know what to grab to make it look real. None of this was good. But it was very funny to watch.
An electric razor. Like, that's not how you cut long hair like that. Anyway.
Absolutely not.
So, yeah, he's just pulling out clumps.
Yeah, clumps. Because it really is just, like, piles of hair. That is not how hair works. That is how extensions work.
Stacy's music hits, so we're done, I guess. But they then put the razor in Crowbar's hands to frame him, and it just works.
Yeah. Again, these women are smarter than this. All that being said, though, how did you feel about the Stacy and Crowbar moment?
Oh, the when she like got on her knees and whatever.
It was hot.
Oh.
Crowbar does it for me, man. I don't know.
You got a weird list.
I love Crowbar, but when he like grabbed the back of her head, I was like, oh my God.
Jesus. While trying to protest his innocence, in the back, Mike Awesome power bombs Crowbar through the table.
God damn it.
Then back from commercial, Crowbar doesn't want medical help, so Mike Awesome just beats him down more and throws him in the ambulance.
Fuck Mike Awesome.
So that's four.
So sure. He knew that he would need four, I guess. Fuck Mike Awesome.
We then get Smooth bringing, it's Tigress, but I think her name's Vanessa now.
In the Filthy Animals, her name is Vanessa?
I thought so.
I've not heard her go by Vanessa.
I heard them say that. Hold on, let's see. Her real name is that, so I don't know whether they slipped up and called her that once, but for some reason I have that in my brain.
I can see that happening.
But yeah, Tigress is brought to the cat by Smooth and says she'll totally have sex with him in her room. They need to distract him.
Yeah, I wasn't totally following that whole train of thought. It just seemed like a ploy to sleep with Tigress.
Yeah, but it was like the Filthy Animals wanted to do something, so they needed to distract Ernest Miller for some reason. They actually explain exactly what this was, and I was like, yeah?
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me.
Well, did you catch the cat's line about having sex with her?
No.
Can I keep the shoes on?
It's like, sorry, ladies, the shoes stay on during sex.
So the Disco Inferno and Conan come out to the ring with mics, and for some reason, this is where I was reminded that these two have a podcast together in 2024.
Hey, who does?
Disco and Conan.
That's cursed.
Yeah.
You could not pay me to listen to that. I'm so sorry.
The two that invite out, Lance Storm and Billy Kidman. And who comes out, Emily?
Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera in their lowest effort cosplays of Lance and Billy.
I think Rey is wearing Lance's pants.
Yes, there's at least that. But when they were like, oh, Juventud is being Billy Kidman, I was like, I think that's just what Juventud wore. Like, that's just his clothes.
Yeah, and they start asking him questions, and he goes, where's Tori? Oh my God. Got him.
I hated this. I hated every bit of this.
Yeah, Hoovy as Kidman says, oh, I watch Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera tapes. And then they ask Rey a question as Lance Storm, and he says, he's from Calgary, where we don't yell to prove our point. Which, he's immediately cut off by Lance Storm and Kidman coming out.
Yeah.
I feel like this you could have done so something stupid with that, but you did nothing.
Neither of them committed to the bit.
The problem is neither one have established enough personalities to make something fun.
No. Which is such a shame, because like once upon a time, Rey Mysterio had a personality. And somehow it has been kind of just decimated by this.
I mean, you can't do a good impression of Lance Storm and Kidman because there's nothing. There's no substance.
You could do an impression of Kidman. I don't think you can do one of Lance Storm. I think Lance Storm is as interesting as a cardboard box, but
I think it's easier to do one of Lance Storm. But the point is, there's not enough meat on the bone. It's not Canyon doing DDP.
True. That is true.
But yeah, Storm and Kidman run in. They hit double team action on the Filthy Animals, which gets a two count. This is a match.
Surprise!
Yeah. The ref just slides in. Like, what?
But hey, you know what? I'm not mad because three out of four of these men I don't mind watching in the ring.
Who is the fourth here?
Fucking Hoovy. I know. I'm not a fan of Hoovy.
Okay. But yeah, it's Kidman and Lance Storm versus Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero. We got a Thunder rematch. Hoovy hits a powerbomb-style dominator on Kidman, but eats a Lance Storm superkick. Storm goes for a press slam on Hoovy, but Rey dropkicks Storm, so Hoovy lands on top of him. The Filthy Animals hit a double-team low-blow leg drop, and Hoovy hits a wheelbarrow Hurricane Rana. Storm hits a stun gun and tags in Kidman, who hits a sky-high to Rey, and then we get a back suplex diving leg drop combo with Lance Storm to Hoovy. The Filthy Animals then hit a very sloppy double-team diving facebuster kind of move. Jesus. I appreciate the attempt that, like, all right, we're doing something different.
That's true. Yeah, I'll take that. Honestly, this match was kind of a breath of fresh air, so I will take it.
Yeah, it's not, we fucked up the timing on a double DDT. It's like, we had like a wheelbarrow position, and you're going to do a dive, and it's difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
We get a face jam to Hoovy from Kidman, which I laughed.
Sorry, what? I will not call it a face jam. You cannot make me.
Not even fake Billy Kidman can powerbomb Billy Kidman. Lance Storm then turns a Hurricane Rana into a powerbomb, and after some filthy animal interference, Rey Mysterio hits a top rope bulldog on Kidman on a chair for the win.
Ugh.
Post-match, the filthy animals beat down the faces as Tony Schiavone's like, wait a minute, that's outside interference. And I'm like, that's why you had to distract the cat. That's why, because there's no outside interference allowed. They didn't mention that at all this episode. Nope. I literally forgot that it's...
Yeah.
I mean, technically it's never allowed, but this is like, you'll get suspended.
They did kind of mention that rule again, like as a reminder in the recap, like at the very beginning of the show. To like, reminder, hey, this was a thing.
But this felt like way too many steps to just have an interference finish.
Oh, I 100% agree. And Tony pointing that out just felt like Tony wasn't really paying attention either.
Yeah.
It kind of like called him out of like, oh, wait, that you. Hey, don't do that.
Well, I guess technically Kat said he'd be gone for 2 minutes. So because he misses this by 30 seconds. So the cat comes back right once the match is over.
Mm.
And he's tucking in his shirt. So it's like, okay, confirmed, I guess they did bone.
Yeah, it only took you 2 minutes.
Well, I think he says, it was the longest 2 minutes of my life.
Sure.
But he did say, I only need 2 minutes.
That's not a bragging point, no. My friends.
But yeah, this match was, in ring-wise, one of the best matches we've had in a while.
Yes. Oh my God, yes. I was ready, so I hated the beginning, and I was ready for this to be my worst bit, because these two groups have not been doing good matches for a while, and I've just not been... excited to see Billy Kidman and his people or Ray on his people.
Been doing matches because everyone's been hurt in the filthy animals.
Yes, that too.
It's just disco.
But when I realized what we were watching and it was Ray and Billy, I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Please.
It's like what we said we were excited for when they turned on Billy.
Yes. I needed this. I needed every bit of this. I will forego the beginning. The beginning was garbage, but the match was worth it. Hoovy, we don't need him. He doesn't need to be here.
Speaking of bad promos and garbage, take your pick which one I'm talking about here. It's Pamela Paulshock with Vampiro.
Pamela Paulshock.
And I was like, oh no.
I didn't even realize we hadn't seen her yet.
Yeah.
Oh, Pamela.
Vampiro challenges Dale Torborg to a graveyard match this Sunday on pay-per-view.
So now it's a graveyard match?
Yes.
Okay.
They technically didn't have a match before that, I don't think.
Did they not?
I don't think so.
I thought they definitely had a match. I didn't realize it didn't have a stipulation or whatever.
I think there was just obviously going to be a match. I don't know if they actually had one booked.
Okay.
Back from commercial, Pamela's now with Kevin Nash, who just sleepily cuts a promo about how he'll be the big pissed off guy in the match. Not hard to find.
Cool.
He's half asleep for this promo.
He's so bored. Kevin Nash wants to be here less than I want to be watching the show.
Kevin Nash has the energy of a guy who was just told, no, we're not bringing back Scott Hall.
But they've been saying that for months.
Yeah.
I think it's bizarre between this storyline and the TNA storyline that Kevin Nash, his whole fucking thing for 10 years is, please give my friend a job. Come on. Let it go.
Mike Awesome then comes out to the ring as we see his path of destruction over the past couple days. And oh no, he has a microphone.
Why do we keep letting this man speak?
Mike Awesome then starts cutting a very real promo before noticing a very real sign calling him a mullet. And he's totally not a mullet, you guys, so nobody better say that.
What kind of an insult is that?
They start chanting mullet at him.
Yeah, of course they do.
So Mike Awesome calls out Scott Steiner, who is not here tonight. So Awesome makes a ref, counts Scott Steiner out.
So yeah, he calls a ref into the ring, is like, you better start counting. The bell rings, so now this is a match. And so the ref just starts counting to 10, and then the bell rings again. It's a full fucking match, and now Mike Awesome just beat Scott Steiner again.
Yeah, Awesome celebrates the forfeit and says he's 2-0. Rick Steiner then runs in, and they fuck up his music, so he just gets a single note when he hits the ring.
Oh my God.
The dog-faced gremlin hits a pop-up power slam, and Awesome leaves before Rick warns him not to talk shit about the Steiners.
Yeah, he's like, when you call out a Steiner, make sure neither of us are in the building, which, valid point. But I forgot that the Steiner brothers were back together.
Yeah, they are and they're not.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, are we buddies? Are we helping each other? Where are we?
I don't know. Are they eating the dog-faced gremlins?
They're eating the dogs.
But that brings us, with like 3 minutes left, to our main event. It is Goldberg versus Kevin Nash masquerading as a 20-man battle royal.
So this actually has 5 minutes in the runtime left. We have 5 minutes to play with here. It's perfect for a battle royal.
20-man battle royal.
Yeah.
The cat holds up the faces before they make their entrance. Nash comes out, and then Ray and Hoovy come out. Nash beats them up, eliminates them.
So it's not a battle royal.
Yeah, commentator's like, oh, I guess this is gauntlet style, which, I mean, would be like a Royal Rumble kind of thing.
I guess, but it was not booked as that. It was booked as a battle royal.
Yeah, and Nash easily eliminates an injured Conan, and then Disco is saved by the perfect event. Nash shortly gets the advantage, and Vito joins. Canyon comes out, and Nash is actually being beat down for a sec, so the faces get loose, make the save. Everyone brawls until Goldberg's music hits and he comes out. And somehow, when we cut back to the ring, it's like five guys in there. I'm like, where did everyone go?
Oh.
Goldberg circles the ring as Nash eliminates the last two, and Goldberg sneaks in to kick Nash. The MIA then distract Goldberg when he goes for a spear, and he leaves between the ropes to go after them. Nash kicks Goldberg off the apron to the floor, and yep, he's eliminated. I'm like, what? That's not how battle royals work. That's how women battle royals work in the mid-2000s.
You blew through that match. There's a couple of things that I wanted to like make note of.
Sure. Sorry. To me, there was nothing going on in that match.
Fucking just trained through the station on that match. So there's something very important that I think happened. We talked about Booker earlier, where like he was standing up to the cat. The cat was backstage, and we didn't really set this up well. So the cat had held all of the mid-card, essentially, backstage, and was kind of going to funnel them out one by one.
Yeah, he stopped all the faces, that way they couldn't help Kevin Nash.
Okay, sure. But he was funneling them out kind of one by one so that it could be this gauntlet and like tire out Kevin Nash or whatever, what have you. And I think we got through like four or five guys, and Booker finally came up and like got in the face of the cat again. It was like, who the fuck do you think you are? You're not my boss. That's not how this match works. If you have a problem with it, you can go run to Daddy Eric again, but we're going to go do an actual battle royal, so get fucked. I thought that was a really important moment for Booker T as the face in this moment. So he is the one that leads the charge of all the rest of the men, and that's when we get our actual battle royal.
For a second.
Yes, but it was still a really important character moment, I feel. The other thing that I thought was hilarious was, I am, you know, notorious for watching the timeline as these matches end, especially when we're given 5 minutes to do a match like this. So I was constantly watching the runtime and how much time we had left. When the match started, we had 5 minutes left. We got to the point where we had 2 minutes left in the runtime. Goldberg still had not come to the ring. We get to 1 minute left, and that's when his pyro hits. So that's when Goldberg is on his way out. 30 seconds left in the show is when Goldberg is in the ring and he does his one move. With 30 seconds left in the run.
Yeah. Because they go to brawl after this, and would you believe it, we're out of time.
This felt very, like I said at the very beginning, very original days of Nitro, where it's just like this crazy chaotic fish, oh, we're out of time.
I thought this was terrible.
Yes, I'm not denying that it was terrible. I'm just saying that there were some important moments to note in there.
It also did feel like a bit of bait and switch, where like, look, you knew it was going to be like, oh, you have to go through a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
I was kind of expecting that it was going to be Goldberg and Nash pseudo-teaming up to eliminate everybody so they could face each other.
Mm, that would have been more interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was ready for. So when it was just this, or like, set up, we're doing a pseudo-Royal Rumble. Nash, you're number one. Goldberg, you're 20. So maybe you face each other, maybe not. But
right. I think that's what they were trying to convey with the pseudo-gauntlet. But it was booked really poorly. It was presented really poorly.
The pseudo gauntlet is just so Kevin Nash can get some offense, because all the faces come out at the same time.
Yeah, but like,
there's no reason all the heels don't come out at the same time.
Do we need to show Kevin Nash getting offense?
He does.
He has big boot. That's it. Big boot, big arm. That's it.
There's five moves. You count the fucking hair flip.
Jesus Christ.
So that is this show. This is it's not a Russo one, but it's not a good one.
It
felt like a decline from the last couple weeks.
It definitely does. The last two episodes, I remember we were like, oh shit, this gives me life again. I kind of feel like there's a reason for what we're doing. This episode was like, why am I here?
It also feels like somehow it's panicking that there's a pay-per-view on Sunday for half of it and not caring there's a pay-per-view for the other half.
I think it picked up in the second half, this show. The beginning, the first hour, sucked. I was so bored with everything that happened.
I need you to know the second hour technically starts with the Jeff Jarrett promo.
I recognize that. At least that was something. It wasn't boring. It was offensive, but it wasn't boring.
Well, Emily, speaking of Jeff Jarrett.
Tell me.
I do have one more backstage note I did not say earlier.
Oh, no.
Vince Russo is expected to be back this week.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of, the upcoming Bash at the Beach pay-per-view is expected to be headlined by Hulk Hogan versus Jarrett, but there's a rumor that there's problems with the finish.
Mm.
So we'll let that hang there. And
That's the note? That's it?
Yep.
That's so lame.
Just keep that in mind. But I think it's time to go do best bit, worst bit, and MVP. I think this is going to be 2 out of 3 the same.
Probably.
All right, what is your best bit?
It's that tag match at the end. It's the Ray versus Kidman brawl. I don't care about the other two. It's Ray versus Kidman.
Yes, it is Lance Storm and Kidman versus Juventud Guerrera and Ray.
Sure. I think that was obviously the best, and it was just nice to see those two in the ring again together.
Yeah, I don't think you're giving Hoobie enough credit in the ring, but...
I can't stand him as a person. His personality is annoying, and his in-ring work is not interesting enough to me to make him stand out.
Emily, what is your worst bit?
The opera singers. The fat ladies, if you will. That was disgusting. It was offensive. It had potential to be so much better than it was. And it sucked. What did you pick?
I think I'm going to go with the main event of just sapping my will to live a little bit at the end there. Of like oh yeah, advertised main event. Three minutes, 30 seconds. Yeah, like, what the fuck are we doing here, gang?
Yeah.
We don't need to do the fucking Mike Awesome promo. Have the battle royal go a little longer.
We didn't need Mike Awesome in the show at all.
Luckily, they didn't go the full route, but I was also ready for that to just be more Kevin Nash eliminates everybody on his own.
I mean, we've seen that film before.
Yeah. And then, Emily, I think we're going to agree here. MVP?
Booker T.
Yeah, I think.
Hell yeah, Booker.
He's the best thing on this
yes,
show.
Yes, I need him. I need more of him. I feel like he is kind of our self-insert in the show, where we need somebody for the audience to be like, somebody's got to go stand up to this guy. Booker will do it.
Well, with that, Booker actually now leads this quote-unquote season with most MVPs.
Okay.
This qualifying Bitsies, he has the most.
Does this qualify for those Bitsies?
Yes.
Damn.
So does next episode.
Oh, wow.
Which, that next episode, we finally made it. It's Bash of the Beach 2000.
Finally. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to have so much content to watch. There are so many YouTube videos. There's so many TV documentaries. There's so many podcasts that are just talking about this one moment. And you keep saying it's nothing, but why is everybody talking about it then?
Because it's wrestling interesting, but I feel like you're ready for it to be this monumental industry-changing thing. And it's... Look, I like what happens. Kind of. Long form. You'll understand more when you watch it, but... Yeah, I'm ready for you to have this oversold to you.
Oh, I'm sure it's been oversold. I'm probably going to be annoyed. But now I can watch all the fucking shit around it that you keep gatekeeping from me. So I'm just happy to have that gate opened.
Well, you can't watch that, but you can listen to all of her back catalog.
Oh, fuck you.
Everywhere podcast fan except for SoundCloud. You can also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, everywhere besides Facebook, where it's the Butts in the Seas podcast. Over on our Patreon, we're still going through the new Monday Night Wars. We have the Jesse Ventura story, Butts in the Cinema over there.
We sure do.
And around this time, the McMahon documentary just came out, and that turned into a full-fledged episode as opposed to a brief conversation. So check that out. Emily, any final thoughts before you finally get to have your cake?
Thank God. This episode sucked. Even Otto has been like nudging us for the last hour. Like, why are we talking about this? Can we be done? Like, I agree, man. Now we're done.
But Emily, the monkey's paw has curled because the next episode means Vince Russo is back.
I know.
And he's here for a couple months.
Just a couple months, though. Not forever.
The company shuts down eventually.
Yeah, exactly. There is a light at the end of this tunnel.
But until we finally review Bash the Beach 2000, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts the Seats podcast.
Bye.